There is major concern and confusion among nonprofits and health organizations nationwide about the Trump administration's efforts to freeze federal funding and whether the plan will move forward. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss what a funding freeze would mean for local agencies and the families they serve are Policy Matters Ohio Executive Director Hannah Halbert. Thanks for being here, Hannah.
Oh, happy to be here. Glad to join you all.
And Free Store Food Bank President and CEO Kurt Reiber. Welcome back, Kurt.
Lucy, it's always great to be with you.
Appreciate it. So as I mentioned, the Trump administration ordered a freeze on trillions of dollars of federal funding. A judge in Rhode Island put a pause on that freeze after 22 attorneys general filed a lawsuit. Hannah, where does that leave nonprofits now?
Okay. Well, that's a good question. And, you know, there have been two lawsuits. There are now two restraining orders in place. The most recent coming just yesterday. And in that order, the federal judge blocked the administration from implementing, giving effect to, or reinstating under a different name the directives that were in that original memo that threatened the freeze and set that freeze out into place. And so what we know is that the freeze did not happen, that there is a block on the administration from halting or freezing ongoing payments. But we also know that the reviews and are ongoing. And so as far as we know, payment portals and sort of expected payments are happening. But that threat of what happens if DOGE or some other executive agent decides to cut a program is still up in the air. By law, however, the administration is refrained and restrained from implementing freezes according to that original directive, which is a big relief to many nonprofit organizations across the state, state, local, public agencies, and the people who depend on those services and who work in those jobs.
DOGE, of course, this organization that Elon Musk is heading up, that it's promised to cut lots of money from the federal budget. Kurt, what impact did this threat, even just the threat of a freeze, have on Free Store Food Bank and your clients?
Well, Lucy, as you can imagine, you know, the families that we serve, our neighbors in need, are really struggling. And this is just one more thing that they have to worry about. They have to be concerned about. It also was concerning to some of our staff members because they were looking at it because, you know, several of them are funded under various, you know, grants that are coming from the federal government or through reimbursements from the federal government. So we had to reassure them. We, you know, obviously, the Free Store is in a great position as far as reserves go right now. Our government funding or reimbursements represent about 13% of our overall budget. In dollar amounts, that's a little over $3.5 million. So that's a significant number. But you know, we understand that the freeze does not impact the SNAP benefits, nor does it impact Medicaid benefits, because you know, 2/3 of our families have to decide: do I buy food or do I pay my rent? Do I buy food or do I get medicine? And that's a challenge that nobody wants to face.
Now, my understanding was, though, that when it looked like the freeze was going to happen, you all kind of changed some of your policies in terms of how much food families could get. Do I understand that correctly?
Well, those were actually guidelines that were directed by the USDA prior to the freeze discussion.
Okay.
So those are basically saying that we can no longer ask how many people are in a family, you know, unit, where the families are residing at. And we did that primarily so we can get more food to more families. If they're larger families, we were able to give them more food. Now we're going to a general distribution that, you know, families will get about 85 pounds of food once a month. and that's during the school year. And then when they're off school, then we'll be able to come and shop at our markets twice a month.
And that's because of some change from the USDA?
Yeah, the USDA basically put some guidelines out there as far as you know, what we can and cannot ask you know, the patrons that come to, you know, customers that come to our markets. But that, you know, we're working through that, and I think it's something that you know, we're still going to be able to get an adequate supply of food to the families that we're serving.
We're talking about the potential impact of a federal funding freeze that's been threatened by the Trump administration. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. Hannah, you were talking about how there have been two lawsuits, two restraining orders to stop this funding freeze. One of them, the one that was decided by a Rhode Island judge, technically applies to the states and the District of Columbia that filed the lawsuit, as I understand it. Does this second lawsuit apply to all 50 states in the District of Columbia? Because Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana weren't among those states that sued in the Rhode Island case.
That's right. So the decision that came down yesterday was in response to a lawsuit that was filed by the National Council of Nonprofits. And so that has far broader consequences because there are nonprofits that are members of the National Council in every state. Our own Ohio Association of Nonprofit Organizations is an ally of the National Council. And so that has much broader consequences on the administration. And, you know, Ohio gets about $41 billion from the federal government and from these grants. The impact of a freeze, a temporary or just a threatened freeze, on creating chaos and fear across programs, those who rely on it and those who are working those jobs, has just been truly incredible. And so the quick action on the part of groups like the National Council and then on the part of the judiciary to clarify the constitutional duties and boundaries of the executive has been tremendous, has been a tremendous relief.
Kurt, Hannah just used the words chaos and fear. Are you getting calls from confused customers, from people who work at the food pantries that you help supply, about confusion?
Yeah, actually, Lucy, just before we came on air, I had two emails that came in from executive directors of some of the pantries that we support, because we serve 615 pantries in three states. And the three programs that are going to be most dramatically impacted would be the Emergency Food Assistance Program, also known as TFAP, CSFP program, which is our senior box program, and Freestore happens to be the largest purveyor of senior boxes in the state of Ohio. And then the third would be the LFPA program, which is where we buy food from minority-owned farms. Those three programs would be the ones that would be subjected to the freeze. And that's something that when you think that Freestore and the way we support our 615 pantries, 50% of our food comes from the USDA. So when those programs are impacted in any way, it's going to have a trickle-down effect to all of the pantries and also the customers, because there are 250,000 of our neighbors, 82,000 of which are kids, that don't know where the next meal is coming from.
You mentioned those three programs that would be affected by this freeze. How do you know that? Like, how do you sort this out? It seems so complicated and confusing to me.
It is. There's a lot of moving parts, and Freestore happens to be one of the more complex food banks in the Feeding America network, because we have not only the food distribution that we do, but we also have the wraparound supportive services. So you know. Our finance team, through the leadership of our chief financial officer, has been able to identify the funding streams that we have coming in. So we're trying to look at those and saying, okay, which ones are at risk? So that's how we came up with the 13%. Actually, 85% of all of our funds come from individuals and family foundations. 13% comes from the federal government reimbursements, and then the remainder comes from corporate sponsorships and the United Way. So, you know, basically, Freestore has set up reserves out there so that this wouldn't immediately impact our pantry partners because we would have some staying power there. But if this goes on indefinitely, this is something that's going to have a devastating effect on the families that we're serving.
Yeah, so you have a little bit of a cushion, but that can't last forever.
Yeah, it's not a sustainable model.
Yeah. What about you, Hannah? Are you hearing from other nonprofits about, gosh, what will this mean for us? You know, you mentioned that chaos and fear. What are you helping from service providers around the state?
Yeah, lots of service providers have been speaking out on the potential impact and what this threat could mean. Addiction Services, based in Cincinnati, had suggested such cuts would lead to a third cut in programming or staff. Healthcare Connections, that provides healthcare access, was wondering how they would pay physicians. So that would be work plus care for people who are underinsured. Lutheran Social Services have been targeted by the administration. Lutheran Social Services are providing domestic violence support, support for homelessness prevention and eradication, also senior housing in Ohio. And they have been targeted specifically over social media by some members affiliated with the administration, from Musk and Mike Flynn. So the range of folks and organizations that are feeling the threat and pressure from this is broad. You know, we also heard from folks who are working in county agencies providing the services that might be threatened by a federal freeze. Like, will we have administrative support to work? If this is cut, will we have a job to do? And so threatening this level of funding collapse is really a threat to the broader economy, not just the individuals who are benefiting from those programs, not just the folks who are working in the public sector, but this is a huge threat to the security and sort of economic stability across the nation.
We'll continue our conversation after a short break, and later in the program, we'll discuss the recipe for Julia Child's success and a new exhibit that tells her story. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about the potential federal funding freeze and what it would mean for local nonprofits and the people they serve. My guests are Policy Matters Ohio Executive Director Hannah Hallbert and Free Store Food Bank President and CEO Kurt Reiber. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Hannah, your organization issued an analysis that looked at how much Ohio gets in federal funds compared with how much in federal taxes Ohio residents pay. Explain what you found with that.
That's right. So looking back to what Ohio received versus what we paid in 2022 and excluding COVID funds, right? So we'll just take that off the table. Ohio got about $1.29 back for every dollar we sent into the federal government. So Ohio is one of the states that gets more than from the Fed than we put in. That rate, so that puts us at the seventh highest benefit state in the nation. So Ohio really is a state that would be upended from a federal freeze. We use federal funds to support things like childcare infrastructure. We have our education programs, particularly for students with high needs or that are economically disadvantaged or in poor households. The federal funding to Ohio is absolutely critical to our functioning as a state. And, you know, Governor DeWine released his budget yesterday afternoon, and we see that continuing. So from things like our school funding or childcare down to how we pay for school lunches, we rely on federal sources of funding.
There are people who argue, of course, that the federal government spends too much and that cuts need to be made. In fact, a spokesman for the Republican supermajority in the Ohio Senate said in a statement, quote, "The American people and Ohio taxpayers understand the federal government's unaccountable spending and $36 trillion national debt that spiraled out of control during the Biden administration. Now is the time to be accountable to taxpayers as the current spending level is not sustainable." Hannah, how do you respond to a comment like that, that, you know, basically something has to be done?
So I think the premise that folks like that are concerned about the level of spending, I think the premise that they're starting from is the wrong one. Instead of looking at the number, I think we should be looking at what are the needs of people in this country. And what we know is that people are working harder and they are struggling to make ends meet at the same time. We saw a referendum on inflation and costs that just happened with the election. And so we know that there's a lot of needs going unmet. Just look at childcare in this state. Look at how we're struggling with public education funding in the state. And so much of that is in part from what the federal government is sending back to states. And so the starting point should be, are we moving Americans ahead? Are we making kids better prepared for a future? Where are those gaps? And then, you know, we talk about debt and not being able to afford meeting those needs, but truly, the debt has been dramatically increased, not through spending, but through these lavish tax cuts that are back on the table under the current administration. So we have been spending through our tax code, so to speak, in the form of trillions of dollars going back to the very wealthiest among us and to very wealthy corporations that I would argue don't need additional help in the form of additional tax breaks, all while wringing our hands over making sure that kids have breakfast and lunch. It's just a matter of priorities. We're not broke. The money is available. And frankly, you know, we can have a conversation about spending levels whenever people can afford to send their kids to childcare so that they can go to work.
Kurt, do you have anything you want to add in terms of a response to that idea that, hey, we need to make cuts in the federal budget?
Yeah, I think, Lucy, one thing that I think people, you know, maybe don't understand or don't comprehend is the fact that these government dollars that come in really help us leverage the philanthropic dollars that are out there. Many times, like I said, you know, 13% of our funding is coming from federal reimbursements. You know, well, we have 85% that's coming from individuals. So people understand that, you know, there's a public-private partnership that has to take place there. So I think, you know, one thing that we've always seen throughout the years is that food insecurity has always been a bipartisan approach. There's always been a lot of give and take, because you have to look at the ripple effect of this as well, because any money that's cut out of the Emergency Food Assistance Program is going to impact, you know, Americans' farmers. And let's face it, the American farmers are always struggling. You know, you've got the big farms that are out there, but the small mom and pop farms, the ones that we buy food from, that's going to be tremendously impacted by, you know, a deviation of this type of, you know, funding effort. So I would encourage folks to take a look at, you know, how we multiply the dollars that are out there, because when Free Store Food Bank talks about it, every dollar that we get in, we can provide the equivalent of three meals, because we're very efficient, very effective, and, you know, working on not only feeding families in the line, but also trying to end the line through our programs like our Cincinnati Cooks program, our Lift the Tri-State Logistics Training program, and our wraparound supportive services provided by our Customer Connection Center.
Hannah, you mentioned school lunches earlier. As I understand it, there's a separate proposal a congressional committee is considering that would cut the number of children who are eligible for free school lunches. What impact could that have on families?
Well, that could have a huge impact on families. It could have a huge impact on schools. We know that when more kids were able to access and did participate in free breakfast and lunch programs through COVID, we saw improvements in attendance, better attention in class, fewer behavioral problems. So when kids have access to meals at school, kids do better. It's pretty basic. You can't learn when you're hungry. And so these proposals would eliminate what's called community eligibility. So if you are in a school, a district, or a group of schools that have 25% or more of your kids eligible for free or reduced lunch, then you can apply to have community eligibility. So everyone is eligible for free or reduced lunch. These universal programs, like those that we had in COVID, had big consequences for how well kids were able to do on attendance and then school performance and behavioral issues. It is just a program that makes so much sense. And in Ohio, we have about 231,000 kids in that community eligibility program. In Hamilton County, it looks like it's about 27,000 kids. So this would have a big change on what's happening in schools across Ohio.
What would that mean for Free Store Food Bank families, Kurt? Because I would imagine that if your child, if you had been getting free lunch and all of a sudden isn't eligible, you might need more food at home.
Well, we've seen it just during the holidays and during the summertime breaks. We talk about a hungry child can't learn and an uneducated adult can't earn. 8 out of 10 kids in the 20 counties served by the Free Store Food Bank are eligible for free and reduced lunches. So we know that when they go home from, school on the weekend, just from lunch on Friday to breakfast on Monday, we're providing 220,000 power packs. It's our weekend feeding program to kids to keep them sort of stabilized during the weekend. On the weekend or on the holiday schedules or when they're off for school, summer break, we've seen a 35% to 40% increase in demand at our pantries, throughout the tri-state area. So we know that that's going to have a dramatic impact on the economic mobility of the family members, but also the educational process for the kids.
We do have a caller on the line. Hi, Barry. Thanks so much for calling and for listening. What's your comment?
Yeah, I had a couple of comments. One of your guests just mentioned earlier about how this increasing the debt is not necessarily a partisan issue. In fact, I just went and looked at some data, and it shows that the debt's increased highest under George Bush out of the last five presidents, and the highest single year was under Trump. So let's not call this a partisan issue. It's not. Second of all, I did want to say that everybody seems to want to jump to canceling programs, and I don't think that's the right solution. I think the right solution is to look at the efficiency with which those programs are being run and look for ways to cut out the fat, not just cut the programs, but look for ways to take out the inefficiencies. And nobody ever seems to take the time to do that.
Thanks, Barry. Appreciate those thoughts. Hannah, what do you think about that? Are there efficiencies that could be realized, maybe trimming these programs instead of a big freeze or cut?
You know, I think that there's, I think that there's probably ways to look at efficiencies, but I think efficiency gets oversold in a lot of ways. A lot of these programs operate on extremely small margins. If you look at the school lunch program, we're talking about meals that are costing like $2 or $3. And there's an intentional policy to have a lot of those decisions made at the local level, for lots of reasons. You want your local schools to be figuring out what meals to be serving your local kids, and that creates a lot of inefficiencies. But there's value in that. That is important for those local communities and for those school kids. And so I think that efficiencies and some of the things that you might see Elon Musk tweet about sound really good, but if we were to really do an audit and look at where things are being spent and how things are being carried out, there are policy purposes behind some of those decisions. And, you know, it's just not a lot of there.
Kurt, we're running short on time for this conversation, but I want to ask you, what's your message to lawmakers in Washington, D.C. and our state capitals as all this gets debated? What would you like them to know?
I think they need to know that, you know, they've worked together over the years. You know, the Democrats and Republicans have come together and, you know, and brought about a farm bill, have brought about these, you know, programs that are really meaningful and efficient, to get together and let cooler heads prevail so that people can understand that, you know, the families that are being targeted with this really don't have any other place to go. And this is where they are. They're, you know, 65% of the families we serve are working families. They're just not making enough money to make ends meet when it comes to the end of the month, end of the day. So let's work together. Let's find a solution. Let's create a hunger-free, healthy, and thriving community.
Well, I've been talking with Policy Matters Ohio Executive Director Hannah Hallbert and Free Store Food Bank President and CEO Kurt Reiber. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Great to be with you, Lucy.
Thank you.
Up next, we'll hear about a new exhibit that explores Julia Child's recipe for success. This is Cincinnati Edition.